Hello, dear reader. Hello, dear listener. And welcome to the Handsome Timmy D Express, which is a proud part of the Dan and Travis Show, an awesome podcast about awesome things that you can find on iTunes or your fancy podcast apps. Or, hey, just type in Dan and Travis on the old Google. We're also a proud part of the Chronic Rift, a series of podcasts that attempt to find the culture in pop culture. I want to thank everybody for listening, downloading, retweeting all the episodes this past year. I want to thank everybody you guys have been the ones to make this podcast happen. This will be the final podcast I record this year. Don't worry, we'll have a lot more coming up in 2016. Probably around February. We'll see how the schedule will shake out. We're recording this December 2015, and unfortunately, it's kind of a timeless topic we're going to talk about today. Last year, we talked about Snack Friday for Black Friday charities and the do's and don'ts of pet adoption. And then this year, the holidays, you turn on the radio, you're going to hear, joy to the world and the most wonderful time of the year, but that's not really true for a lot of people. It may not be true for you. The holidays are actually one of the hardest times of the year for a great number of people. And I figured, what's something practical we can do to help out folks who are suffering from, be it depression, be it mental illness, suicidal thoughts, or are in the grips of addiction? Well, I've got a friend who I've known for about at least half a century. That's not true. About 35 years now, I think. We met at the ripe old age of 5, and I ran off to Los Angeles to tell stories and work in TV and movies, and she decided to do something a lot more practical and helpful. She is a licensed clinical social worker and a writer on this topic. Welcome to the Handsome Timmy D Express, Elizabeth Lumbino.
Hey, Timmy. It's so good to hear from you and be on your show. I totally appreciate it.
Well, thank you for coming on, and hopefully we can counterbalance some of the, I don't even know how to term it, Christmas blues, holiday blues that people are going through, and I don't know exactly how to frame this. This is always a tricky, tough topic and subject for people to talk about. So, I just want to talk about, some of the whys of why this happens, why people get very depressed and down during the holidays, but also. What can those of us who are friends with or family, I think if somebody says, well, I don't know anybody with mental illness or hasn't been affected by it, I think they may not be paying attention. We all have friends, we all have family who've gone through tremendous horrors in this world. And what can we do as friends and family to help them out?
Absolutely. Well, and I think even with your intro, it's interesting. I was going to say the same thing, that at the basic level, there's sort of that cultural message of you will enjoy the holidays,
right.
You will be full of joy and jolly and all of that. And whether you have mental illness or not, substance use issues or not, some of us just really do not have the ability or the capacity to really enjoy this time of year. We might not have those traditional families that you see, sitting around the fire and spreading love and joy. I mean, you might be estranged from your family for a variety of reasons. So even that of who am I going to see during the holidays, maybe no one, or maybe people that you kind of feel like you have to see and are not really looking forward to it. So I think on some level, all of us can relate to those ridiculously high expectations that really, unless you work for Hallmark, are not very attainable. So, I think that kind of leaves a lot of us feeling less than or guilty or, just not feeling in the full holiday spirit because it's not possible.
Yeah, I think the guilt is a big thing, because then I imagine there's a fair amount of folks walking around going, it's the holidays, Christmas, what's wrong with me that I can't?
Exactly.
And
exactly.
That's probably not actually the complete full picture of, there's nothing wrong with you.
Right,
you don't
right,
have to
right.
enjoy the holidays. And
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I think, there's that whole Hallmark, I mentioned Hallmark, but that whole Hallmark ideal of, it's commercialism and consumerism and, all of these expectations on us that just can be really, really intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
So then too, if you have substance use issues or mental health issues, it can really exacerbate it and make it even worse. And then that's what, can make someone feel a little bit more suicidal or feel less than, or, maybe turn to substances a little bit more than they typically would during the rest of the year. And next thing you know, with all of the buildup and, you know, things go untreated or unchecked, you know, we see spikes in suicide rates this time of year. And part of it could be because of that, that they're not, they're missing family members. Maybe loved ones have died, or maybe they're estranged for a variety of reasons. And, you know, we're getting shoved down our throats all the time that you're supposed to be happy and you're supposed to see your family. And it can be very, very difficult for a lot of us.
So what are some answers? You know, I mean, like, what are some of the things that somebody can do? I mean, I know it's hard. I mean, I was Christmas shopping 48 hours ago, and it's like Santa threw up all over the mall.
Right?
And that's great. And look, that's fine. And, you know, no offense to, by the way, like, people should be happy this time of the year. So
yeah,
good for them.
Yeah.
But what are some of the things that, that somebody can do practically that are like, okay, you know, and especially because, let's be honest, we all know it's coming. And especially nowadays, you know, some places are putting up Christmas decorations as early as late October.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
We now know it's coming. What are some things that, that you suggest people can do to cope with that?
Well, I think a huge piece of a lot of this is to stay connected with people that you share things in common with. It's sometimes surprising to learn just how many of us do struggle this time of year. But oftentimes a lot of people may struggle in silence or, you know, not speak up and not reach out because they feel like they're not meeting that ideal. So they may, you know, just kind of keep that to themselves. But if you can find some really good friends that you relate to and can open up with, I think is huge. One of the big trends that I saw started a few years ago, but I saw it even more this year around Thanksgiving was friends having Friendsgiving, which I thought was just fantastic, you know, for those who, and, you know, you might have your traditional Thanksgiving too. And again, nothing wrong with that. But for those who maybe want to celebrate with their friends or maybe don't have that family to go to and may view their friends as that real family and that real people they can connect with, you know, then by all means, make your own traditions. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's a huge piece of it too, is trying to figure out either the aspects of the holidays that you find lovely or things that you can do to help get through. You know, you don't have to do the traditional traditions. You can kind of make up your own and figure out ways to get through and feel a little bit of that joy that, you know, is a great thing. It can be a really great thing. I think too, for those who do feel a little bit anxious with going out into the world, or maybe don't know if they have friends that they can talk to, I think social media is tremendously helpful in situations like this, especially places like Twitter. You know, you can use a variety of hashtags, anxiety, depression, you know, whatever it is, and you'll find dozens, if not hundreds of people who maybe share some of those anxieties and difficulties as you do, and you don't even have to leave the comfort of your bed. You know, you can just kind of tweet out, you know, some of your thoughts and feelings and might get a bunch of responses that help you feel less alone.
Yeah, I know. We always think of social media as a, you know, well, it's a curse and a blessing at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It really can be used in that less narcissistic way, but more of that way of really connecting you with people who may share some of the same struggles that you do that may be across the world. And you don't even have to meet with them face to face. You can just kind of feel a little, you know, a bit supported and less alone.
Right. And then we've mentioned addiction a couple of times, you know, Elizabeth and I both, hail from the Jersey Shore, and we just lost, you know, Stone Temple Pilots are from our neighborhood as well. And Scott Weiland, recently just passed away, and he at the time, the December 3rd, and you wrote a pretty strong piece about it and how addiction really can kick in at this time of year. And he serves as a reminder. I mean, Scott Weiland, and along with Layne Staley from Alice in Chains, and Kurt Cobain, quite frankly, from that that era of music, got gripped by it. I mean, these were guys who had the whole world presented to them,
exactly,
as far as fame, fortune, artistic freedom, you know, and they could do whatever they wanted. And unfortunately, even they couldn't escape the throes of addiction.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And that just shows how powerful addiction is.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And how powerful mental illness is, that on the one hand, they affect anyone and everyone. So it doesn't almost matter how much money you have or your status or those kinds of things, because if you're predisposed to developing mental illness and or addictions, you're going to get it. And, you know, you can have a ton of resources and support at your fingers, and mm-hmm. you know, that disease is going to take over. So yeah, it's a really scary thing.
The and then going back to something you said before, I think there's also a notion of in our society and culture of togetherness and everything, which is, you know, all fine and good and all that, but like and wonderful and fantastic and all this kind of thing, but I feel like, is it not okay to be alone? Like, I almost feel like sometimes it's there's people who are lonely, and then there's people who are alone, and sometimes people could, I don't know, like, maybe I'm wrong about that, but like, is it not okay for some people, like, oh, guess what? If you, sometimes it's okay to be alone.
Oh, absolutely.
You don't have to force false friendships and relationships, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. I think with any and all behaviors and mood states, I think the key is the motivation and intention. So if someone wants to be alone and wants to spend the holidays alone and feels more comfortable spending holidays alone, and that's mm-hmm. their intention, yeah. and, you know, they're doing it out of their own desire and that's what they want to do, then by all means, absolutely. However, if someone is alone and not enjoying it,
right.
and does need to feel that connection, you know, so I think there's a huge distinction there, but absolutely. I think the key is if you can find out what makes you happy and how you feel most comfortable and what is healthiest for you, and be able to go forward and do that in the best possible way that, you know, allows you to feel, you know, your best self, then absolutely. So yeah, no, I'm all for that too. I know plenty of people who deliberately isolate themselves during the holidays because they would prefer to be alone and would prefer to not even engage in any of that, you know, raw and glitter and sparkle and Santa thrown up all over the place, you know? So absolutely, if that's your choice, by all means.
And that has worked for those people.
Correct. Correct. Yes. Yep.
Yeah, I think there's something to that, which is like finding out kind of whatever works and stuff. And that's one of the reasons why I want to bring on a professional to talk about this, because like far too often in this internet age, you hear like, oh, I, you know, read this on this forum and some friend of some anonymous person said you should do this.
Correct.
And then all of a sudden that becomes conventional wisdom
somehow
or another in this viral age. Like what do you find are some of the biggest misconceptions you hear about dealing with these issues?
I think you nailed it right there. Is one of the biggest misconceptions is thinking that what works for one person is supposed to work for everyone.
Mm.
I think there's a huge misconception, like you say, that misconception that we have to do what everyone else is doing, or that whatever the status quo is, or whatever, you know, those of us around us are doing and is making them happy is going to make us happy. And it doesn't work that way. And unfortunately, like you say, with social media and with us being so bombarded with information, that's a beautiful thing in that we can access a lot of resources and we can access a lot of ways of handling stress and coping skills and really gather a lot of resources. However, like you say, there's some of those coping skills or some of those strategies that are sort of forced down our throats. And if someone is saying, you know, this worked for me and it gets viral and all that kind of stuff, and then it doesn't work for that individual who tries it, then that person feels even more like a failure. So you're right. There becomes that kind of cycle of, you know, unrealistic expectations or things that don't necessarily fit for all of us. So I think the key with any sort of wellness and finding your own sense of peace and fulfilled life is to do what works best for you. You know, search a lot of different resources, kind of put yourself out there and read, you know, a lot of different things out there to get that information and get lots of different strategies and tactics, and then try what works best for you. It might take 4 or 5 or 12 or 15 different tries to think, okay, maybe meditation will work. Okay, no, right. Meditation doesn't work. Maybe exercise will work. Okay, that works a little, but I'm still not feeling 100%. Okay, let me try adding in being social. So I think the key is to find sort of your own recipe of coping skills that works best for you, and not feel, I mean, this is easier said than done, than to not feel the pressure of, you know, what everybody else is doing. But it kind of goes along with the holidays, you know, whatever the commercials are telling us to do does not fit everybody out there. So I think the key is, if you can find that confidence and find that ability to figure out what makes you happy, I think that that's what will work the best. Again, within healthy limits and within, you know, what works best for you.
Let's go back a little further though, because I think one of the hardest things is for people to do is to turn around and say, I want to go like a little further back in the process of like, I think it's a lot, it's very difficult for people to say, oh my God, I'm actually suffering from this. And oh my God, I actually need help.
Sure.
So what's your advice for people who are like, let's say somebody listening to this is like, has a friend who suffers a very deep depression or anxiety during the holidays, and they don't get it treated and they don't know how to ask for help. What's your advice for that friend? Like, how do you convince that person of like, hey, guess what? It's okay to go get this thing fixed, you know, because there is still a huge, massive stigma to this stuff.
Oh, tremendous.
And probably will be for a large number of years to come.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think the stigma continues to be intense and pervasive, and I think will continue to be intense and pervasive until who knows what. I don't know if it has to be, you know, more and more celebrities struggle with it, so it becomes kind of normalized. I don't know. Hang on now, dog is... She has to act up, right? No, sir.
No, we're dog lovers. We're dog lovers on the Handsome 2ED Express. That's no problem. Kopi has been heard on many shows, so
gosh.
No problem at
yes,
all.
Yes, she has. Yes, she has. I think one of the biggest things we can do for friends that we see who are struggling is to listen, to as non-judgmentally as we can sort of show them what we're seeing. You know, say, I see you isolating, or I see you, you know, your mood changing a little bit, or, you know, just be very, very gentle and calming with your language and try and not be judgmental at all, which is very hard. It's hard to not really want to say, hey, come on, let's do something. Let me help you. But if you can very gently and compassionately listen and offer your ear and your shoulder and whatever the friend you think the friend might need, to say, well, tell me what's going on with you and let me see if I can help you. And here are some resources and here's some information I can give you. And let's try and work on this together. Cause I don't want to, you know, see you struggling anymore.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a really great point. And I think a lot of people think, oh, I have to go through this on my own. And quite frankly, real friends and real family, people that care about you and love you, will do their best to go through it with you. Correct. I know I've done that for people in times of crisis. I'm glad to say people have done that for me in times of crisis. And I know of many stories of times like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's hard. I think the hardest thing, it's one of those strange things. It kind of sounds like the easiest sort the path of least resistance, and I'm searching for words here. I don't know if this is the most accurate way, and I want to be sensitive about it. Like the path of least resistance is to keep it secret, but in many ways, that's almost the worst thing you can do, because you're never going to get it treated, and you're never going to find the support system if all you do is keep it a secret. If that makes a certain sense.
No, you're absolutely right. I think there's a lot of factors at play there. I think, as you mentioned before, the stigma. Absolutely, stigma's huge. Sometimes we may not realize we're fully struggling until someone mirrors it back to us.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be something, again, not to put it in simplistic terms, but it could be, you know, if this is something you've been trying to manage yourself for so long, you may not even really think to reach out to someone. Right. You know, you may think that you're, you know, this is what I've been doing for 20 some odd years, and may not fully realize how you change during the holidays, or you may not fully realize how you impact those around you. So that's why I say too, if someone like a friend or family member is very gently reflecting some of what they see back to that person, they might say, oh, wow. You know, they may not have even fully realized how much their behavior is changing because it becomes so normal for them. So that when that person reflects it back to them and they're able to kind of see and maybe, okay, let's get you some of that support. Let's get you some of that information and, you know, resources so that maybe you can start to make some really valuable changes.
We have a massive, I think, problem. And well, we have I would call it an epidemic, but it's fair to say it's a problem with people shooting each other with guns.
Yes.
In America, it is an American problem, and there's lots of different solutions and there's lots of different ways to fix it. Invariably, and you know, I'm about whatever it is, half hour, 45 minutes from the San Bernardino shooting. And it's going to hit close to home. Mental illness is now becoming the thing. Everybody's touched by mental illness some way, and it's getting to the point where everybody's touched by a shooting some way in some regards. And the mental illness topic comes up a lot. And I see some people say, don't blame the mentally ill for shootings. That furthers the stigma. And my sort of issue with that is kind of like, I don't want to ever further the issue, but I almost feel like mental illness is almost becoming a term that is becoming too much of a blanket or too wide an umbrella that doesn't cover everything. Like you've mentioned, we've talked about anxiety, depression, suicidal tendencies, things like that. I mean, all of that falls under the umbrella of mental illness, but it's becoming a really big umbrella, and a really big net, and I'm not sure it fits anymore. You know, I'm starting to think that term doesn't really apply. I mean, who isn't mentally ill at one point or another in their lives? I can't think of anybody. You know,
you're absolutely right.
So what can we do to like specify that, or like to make it more clear and understandable what it is people are going through in your mind?
Well, I think that's a pretty really, really, really broad, like you say, it's a very, very broad topic and all encompassing. At the same time, you know, I want to be very, very clear that those with mental illness do not always act violently, and those who are violent do not always have mental illness. I just want to make that
very clear distinction. That's what we're going through.
Yeah. But you're right. A lot of times, media or individuals are very quick to question someone's mental illness when there is, you know, violence involved. And again, I mean, someone is not necessarily in the healthiest frame of mind when they make a decision to pick up a gun and wreak havoc. So, but are they classified as mentally ill? It's unclear. And it might be, you know, one person is and another person is not. Yeah. So it's not just, like you say, it's not just something we can blanketly say, someone who, you know, goes on a mass serial, you know, shooting has mental illness. Absolutely not. I think, well, you're right. There is a huge distinction between a lot of diagnoses of mental illness. There's also some mental health issues, things like anxiety and depression. You could have traits around anxiety or depression without fully being diagnosed with having depression or anxiety. So, yeah, it is a very complicated field, and it's a lot of distinct diagnoses and information out there. And I think that's why it is so very important, if you feel that you do have some symptoms, to go to see a trained professional who can, you know, do a very extensive workup and, you know, let you know what's going on. But you're absolutely right. I think we do throw that term around a little bit too loosely and simplistically when it is much, much more involved.
And I think that you and I talked quite a bit, last year already was, the shocking, I believe it was a Thursday. I mean, when the whole world kind of stood still for a second because Robin Williams committed suicide. And it was one of those things that I think put a real face to this. And a lot of those questions about specificity and like, what is this thing we're talking about? Because he certainly summed up the person who like, how him? Mm-hmm. You know, that seemed, the whole world seemed to sort of look up like a dog hearing a funny noise. Like, what? Not him, of all people. And quite frankly, that is the thing of, like, a lot of times those smiles and that laughter hides a lot of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And that nobody's really immune to it.
Absolutely. Like, I'm just going to say
money, fame, and fortune doesn't fix it.
Correct. Absolutely not. And I think we can't underestimate the power of humor. Humor in and of itself is a tremendous coping skill. So whether someone in Robin Williams himself, you know, we're still learning every day new things that were going on with him. He seemed to have had some, you know, real physical health issues, that kind of thing. So I'm not sure if we'll ever fully understand, you know, his motivations and his reasons. However, the key is he was in such a state of despair for whatever reason that he felt his only way out was to end his life. And it is shocking because he is one of the funniest human beings ever to have walked the face of the earth. At the same time, and you probably see this in your industry as well, as like you say, some of those people who are very hilarious and funny, either it's a mask hiding some mental illness or some issues, or they are using it in a way to cope. Mm-hmm. And maybe they, you know, in their comedy or in their routines or in their writing, they might allude a lot to some of the things that they are going through. So humor is a huge, huge, huge coping skill that I actually recommend to a lot of my clients. And I use a lot myself, because laughing and, you know, trying to really put forward that humorous attitude can help. It can really help minimize some of those more painful symptoms that might be going on underneath.
One of the other things, let's talk about, you wrote a piece around the time, and I just pulled it up on your website. By the way, for those who don't see the links below, www.elizabethlombino.com features a lot of writings and stuff on these topics. I highly recommend them. And one of them here that I thought was really fascinating, because there was a Robin Williams did change the conversation in many ways, because, like, before Robin Williams, it was, if you committed suicide, you were a coward. Mm-hmm. And then, like, Henry Rollins, I believe, caught a lot of flack for some of his comments when he kind of alluded to some of that. And Henry Rollins is a pretty smart guy who took a lot of it on the chin and you know, listened to what people had to say. But you wrote a piece that was really interesting here called Suicide is Not a Choice. Tell us about that a bit. And that kind of it changes some of that, again, preconceived notion about what suicide really is.
Absolutely. No, thanks for saying that. Yeah, I mean, it is not a choice. Like I said, even with Robin Williams, he was, again, we don't know the specifics and what was going through his mind at the time that, you know, that happened. But no one would ever knowingly choose to end their life unless they felt that there was absolutely no other possible option at all. So we're talking some really disturbing, distressful symptoms, some very difficult, unimaginable terror that's going on through a person's mind that leads them to believe through no doing of their own. It's almost like their mind, pieces of their mind are saying, there's absolutely nothing you can do. You need to end it right now.
Jesus.
I mean, it's some scary stuff. Yeah. There's a whole movement, again, talking about Twitter and social media. One of the hashtags is Depression Lies, L-I-E-S, Depression Lies. And there's a whole movement through social media and just in the mental health world in general that tells people, you know, don't listen to what depression is telling you. Depression will take over your mind and it will take over your thoughts and it will tell you some really horrible things, that you aren't worth anything, that no one loves you, that, you know, how are you doing this or how are you doing that? You are a terrible person. And the depression itself really becomes infectious and it infects our brains and gives us those messages of, dude, you know what? It's time to end it all. You're worthless. You're terrible. Who's going to love you? Who's going to believe you? No one's going to listen to you. I'm in control, meaning depression. Depression's in control. Depression's going to take over. And next thing you know, you're feeling so helpless and you're hearing all these messages repeated over and over in your mind that you feel that you have no control over. And unfortunately, things happen. So that's why I say it's not a choice, because those who have ever really struggled with depressive thoughts or depression on any scale knows that voice and knows that, you know, power that it can have over you.
How you've been practicing in this field for quite a long time now. What sort of longer than you care to admit? But what sort of, I mean, I feel like over the past few years, a lot of notions and preconceived, you know, misconceptions and preconceived notions have actually changed. I know we have a long way to go for us completely understanding all this stuff, but how much, I mean, progress has been made, has it not?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, unfortunately, when things happen with celebrities, fortunately and unfortunately, it does raise awareness. I do think I cannot stress enough the importance of social media. While sometimes, and I think, you know, we mentioned this earlier, that it can be a blessing and a curse. There's a lot on social media that's just not, you know, productive at all. And then there's moments like this where you can really connect with people who feel a lot of the same things that you do, and you can find that community, you know, across the world that really can help you. One of the most amazing stories I ever heard, and I was actually a part of, around postpartum depression, was a woman in Canada who tweeted a picture of several of her bottles of pills, and she had poured them out on her kitchen table or whatever it was. So there was this huge pile of pills, and she wrote something like, "What if?" and posted that on Twitter. And everyone in the PPD, postpartum depression community, you know, that was active at that time saw it. And what ended up happening, a bunch of women who really knew her, and, you know, we're talking women in America and in England and, you know, hundreds of miles away, reached out to her, and a few people actually went to her house that lived nearby her. Some people called the authorities, and they ended up saving her life. So, you know, things like that where, you know, people are connecting with each other and supporting each other in ways that were absolutely impossible 10 years ago. So it's pretty remarkable, some of those things that have changed. And because of that, too, we're getting more recognition and we're seeing a lot more advocacy and awareness around these issues. And a lot of it has to do with social media and with, you know, other celebrities speaking out, even in the positive ways, you know, saying that their sister or their brother or their parent has struggled. So, yes, we have come light years.
Well, I also feel like there's postpartum and post-traumatic stress were two things that I think 20 years ago were kind of, hey, walk it off.
Yep. Yeah, you
know,
pretty much.
And now that we have, and again, if you know, I talk about people who are touched by mental illness and stuff. I mean, the good, bad, right, wrong of the war has been discussed numerous places and can be discussed numerous places. But I mean, who doesn't know a vet?
Yeah.
You know, who doesn't know a vet? And what we've learned from the Iraq war and Afghanistan and who knows what's going to happen with ISIS, ISIL. It's we're learning, hey, you can't just put a bunch of young people into a situation where they're being shot at and shooting at people and then pull them out and expect them all to be okay.
Exactly.
It doesn't work that way. And nobody's, anybody going through PTSD or anything, it's, you know, I mean, my God, you know, of course, you know what I mean? In my mind, I'm sitting here going, well, of course somebody has PTSD.
Right.
What do you expect when you put them through this stuff? And it's a utter tragedy that it's taken this long and after centuries of war to finally sort of turn around and say, hey, wait a second. No wonder people are kind of really messed up and damaged. You know, and again, I'm not trying to sound glib. Please don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to sound glib or demeaning about it at all. But it's like, yeah, you put people into that, they're going to come out damaged.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, you're right. And I think that awareness and more people speaking up and speaking out with their own stories has really helped raise that awareness and help shift how we view things like sending folks into war and, you know, all of that. So absolutely. Absolutely.
So we may not be able to fix all of it.
Oh, come on, let's do it.
We certainly can try. Let's talk practically, what resources can we direct people? If somebody's listening to this and says, oh my God, I have a friend, or oh my God, it's me. I need to talk to somebody. I need some help. I'm struggling. I'm hopeless. I'm alone. What do I do? Mm-hmm. Where can we send people? What can we do to help them out in a practical way?
Absolutely. Well, like I said to you, I can't stress social media enough. So I think even just doing some of those searches around depression and anxiety will bring up a ton of information and people that are really ready, willing, and able to help and to, send a little bit of love over social media. I think that's a tremendous start for someone. Also, too, if there are some deeper thoughts or if you fear for a friend or for yourself, Suicide Helpline is a tremendous resource. It's 24/7. I'll give out that number. It's 1-800-273-TALK, 8255. 1-800-273-8255. That is a huge resource, and you don't have to be, certified suicidal. You can have some distressing thoughts. You can call them up and they will support you. So it's not like there's a criteria of where you need to be in order to call them. I know it sounds, Suicide Helpline, I need to be on a bridge somewhere. No, it doesn't have to be as deep as that. You can be having some of those really difficult thoughts going on through your mind and call them up. And the team there is very supportive, very encouraging, and can just give you sort of that in the moment, 2 a.m., I'm feeling distressed, and kind of get that support and that love that you need to make it through. Now, so I certainly recommend that.
Is that hotline also work for like friends? Like, in other words, if I have a friend who I'm very worried about, can I call that hotline?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They give out all kinds of resources. They provide a ton of information, a ton of support, things that you can do, like you say, to help a friend. Absolutely. 100%.
And that's the real asking for a friend, that's become a joke nowadays, but you can actually ask for a friend.
Absolutely.
Especially
absolutely.
If you know someone who's backed in a corner, it may be up to you to call and say, mm-hmm. my best friend in the world is dying here. What am I going to do?
Exactly. And they're not answering their phone and they're not letting me in, and I need some other strategies. Absolutely. They can certainly give you that support. They can give you any resources and information that you need to help get you through.
And then I'm going to send folks to your website, www.elizabethlombino. And then, for me, my message to folks would be, and back me up. You're the professional. I'm just some schmuck. I'm just some schmuck who writes screenplays. But like, there should never ever be anything wrong with asking for help for anything. We ask for help with so many things in life. I can't fix my car. I go to a professional. There's so many things we go and turn to professionals about, and yet for some reason, for many of us, there's a real fear about turning to a professional about the most important thing in our world, which is like health and our mental health. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mentally, don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't be afraid to reach out. It's the strongest, best thing in the world you could do.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right.
Elizabeth Lombino, thanks so much for coming on board and sharing some really insightful and practical and pragmatic thoughts to help those who may not love the holidays and may be going through one of the hardest times of the year. So hopefully this has helped some folks out there who've been listening.
Oh, I hope so too. Thank you so much for having me on. This has been incredible. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. And thank you everybody for downloading, listening, retweeting, and promoting, and help spread the word. We'll be posting this all over social media, and we'll probably do so again next year, because it'll be here next year, and some folks will hopefully need to hear, or hopefully we'll get something out of these words next year. Thanks, everyone, and of course, have a very wonderful, healthy, safe, and happy holiday season. This is Tim Davis. We'll see you in 2016.